This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, New Year's resolutions can feel overwhelming when they're about reinventing yourself. But the new year doesn't require a new you, maybe just a less burdened you. And therapy can be a powerful tool for that. It can help you identify what's weighing you down or holding you back through an unbiased perspective, so you can better understand your relationships, your motivations, and your emotions. And that understanding can lead to real change. For me, one of the things I'm always working to let go of is the pressure to have everything figured out all the time. Personally, professionally, creatively, that idea that you're supposed to always be moving forward with total clarity, that can be heavy. Learning how to unpack where that pressure comes from, that can make a real difference. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. You can just fill out a short questionnaire about your needs and preferences, and they do the matching work for you. With over 12 years of experience, more than 30,000 therapists, over 5 million people served worldwide, they typically get it right the first time. And if they don't, you can switch to another therapist from their tailored recommendations. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead. Download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With, an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Whether you're listening on YouTube or one of the podcast channels like iTunes or Podchaser, please do give us a rating or review while you're over there. I'm Kyle Meredith, and today my guest is Johnny Marr. He is back with his third solo record, Call the Comets. We talk about its relation to today's politics, as well as his early 80s life during the Thatcher and Reagan administrations. There's also some conversation on some of the collaborations he's done over the years with The, with Modest Mouse, with Hans Zimmer, and of course with The Smiths. And we get an update on will there be more of those box sets like last year's anniversary of The Queen is Dead. It's Kyle Meredith with Johnny Marr.
Hey, Kyle, it's Johnny Marr here.
Hey, Johnny Marr, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. I'm good. How's things, man?
I am. I'm so excited to talk to you. I've loved the solo records. We got the third one coming out, Call the Comets. And from what I've heard so far, this is a really cool record. And I guess the easiest place to talk about is maybe the loose narrative that kind of goes throughout this one. As I gather, it's about an alternative society in the, as you put it, not too distant future.
Yeah, the record does have a theme that I come back to in the songs that aren't the personal ones. And that theme really is that I found myself kind of, because I genuinely like to think about things I pick up on in society, and I've done that on the first two records. I genuinely like to do that, but I found that I didn't want to sing about society as it is now. And so I ended up, I guess, going into my imagination and thinking about a sort of, in a way, an alternative society, or what it would be like if, you know, if we had a different one. It's not too as conceptual as that might sound. I mean, really, what happened was with everything that's been going on over the last couple of years politically, I just didn't want to be brought down by my work, my record brought down by singing about the political scene. But, you know, you can't help but sing about the world you live in. So I ended up kind of, as I say, going into my imagination somewhat and singing about what it would be like. There's a few songs on there that are kind of what it would be like to be in a different society. The opening song, Rise, is pretty much two characters, you know, man, woman, lovers, you know, partners, friends, me and the audience, whoever, kind of going, all right, well, we've got this new future to deal with. Are we both up for it? And it's very, a very sort of stirring song. And once that was in my imagination, a few other songs kind of followed that kind of theme.
When you look at this, you know, and so we're talking about, you know, sort of some inspirations from Brexit, from what's happening in the White House, certainly other places around the globe too. Do you see similarities of early 80s England with the Thatchers and everything that was happening there, the Reagans over here?
That's a good question, I think. I guess when I first started putting the solo records out, I found that I was being asked in interviews quite a lot about, you know, my feelings about whether musicians these days are less political, or they need to, should people have more political kind of commentary in their songs. I think the answer to that is no, I don't think there's a responsibility of the artist, any artist in movies or, you know, movies or music or anything, really. It's all, you know, up to the individual. However, you know, I do come from, started out in the early 80s when in the UK, Thatcherism had a very, very big influence on our day-to-day living, and as did Reaganomics, I suppose is the name for it in the US. And really, me and what I was doing with the Smiths and a whole bunch of the British bands, The Cure, New Order, I guess Depeche Mode, on and on, you know, without, you know, having to stand on a soapbox and be preachy or even be overtly political, it was understood really that there was a common enemy that we felt that we were being squeezed out by, and that kind of poor folks were being kind of squeezed out by, and music fans. So just the act of being in a band felt almost like a position, you know, taking a position. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm known for coming from that period, and I guess people who are interested in me or followed me over the years can kind of guess how I feel about certain things and certain people who are on the political scene. So I find that I'm being asked kind of a lot about that. But to answer your question, yeah, I think it is starting to feel a little bit like the squeeze is on, and there are people who are controlling our lives and are very, very big in our lives, who remind you of those other figures. You know, it feels like a similar kind of similar issues, similar kind of struggles, similar kind of frustrations. But I do have to say that, strangely enough, those people kind of almost did me a favor with my record, because I so wanted to not have them in my songs. I kind of remembered that my life as a musician and my life as a music fan can be about escaping those things. And that, let's call it rock music, if you like, can be a pretty useful escape from those kind of concerns, you know. I always assume that my audience are people who are like me and who like music for the same reasons. And, you know, a few songs into the record, I thought, hey, yeah, you know, this is pretty cool. I'm singing about escape here. You know, there's quite a few songs that are about different, just getting away from it. And with the exception of one song, which is called Bug, which is directly influenced by the feeling of the virus spreading through us, the virus that is the right-wing ideology. With the exception of that song, the record is a musician escaping into his band and his life, his music, and music. And hopefully I've made a record that when people listen to, it can make them feel like they're escaping too. You know, I've got no answers to what ails us, and I don't feel myself that I'm smart enough to have any kind of solutions. But I think if I can make for a really interesting list, then I'm doing my job, you know.
I mean, you can definitely get that. And I sort of had that written here, escapism and inspiration, because I know one is to, you know, to kind of pull away from maybe the uglier stuff out there, and then to kind of give that inspiration to make that better life. And I know that's heard throughout this record. So
I'm good. Yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that. Yeah,
and I know there are a lot of, you know, singular issues that you could focus on if you wanted to. Before the record came out, there was The Priest, which I think I remember reading kind of hit on the homeless epidemic that's happening out there. And I want to tie that in because you mentioned some of the other 80s bands that you came up with, Depeche Mode being one of those. A couple of years ago, you covered I Feel You. I hear that sound coming through a song like The Priest, and I think it's a little bit in there in New Dominoes as well. I don't know if there was a direct influence in there, if it's sort of just, you know, your time and era, you know, proving itself and showing itself.
Well, you know, there's a very practical reason for that, and that's my studio space is in an old factory. It's on the top floor of an old factory building on the outskirts of town, and I think the environment feels very industrial, you know, and that kind of seeped into it without a doubt. Being high up there in this big industrial place makes you feel a certain way, and I like that kind of music anyway. To me, it's when those bands were starting out, when we were all starting out in the early 80s, it was quite exciting to take the technology of the drum machines and kind of mess with them a little bit, I think. That felt very forward-looking to me. And some of the songs you mentioned, The Priest and New Dominions, and there's a couple of others on the record, were a direct result of me following that process where I took a drum machine and I put it through a bunch of guitar pedals and with echo on and lots of reverb and made this big kind of industrial kind of noise. And I thought, oh, yeah, that's a kind of cool atmosphere that I've set up there. It isn't necessarily me taking a song into my band and playing it on a guitar and singing it and saying, this is the way the song goes, let's all join in. It's that kind of industrial process. So I like that. It still feels, it feels much more musical and creative than pushing a mouse around on a computer screen and pulling down a bunch of menus. You can design a similar kind of effect, and there are plenty of great electronic programmers out there who can follow that process. But, you know, I'm from the kind of original days where it's fun to take a drum machine and put it through a bunch of guitar amps and try and get a performance out of it and then build a song on top of that, which is what I did with a few of the numbers. And then me and the band then have to learn how to play that. And that's that still feels strangely futuristic to me. And it creates a kind of sound that those machines create. It's sort of strangely soulful in a very cold way, you know.
Right. I think that's made it sound a bit more, I don't know if that's the right phrasing, but I think this one's a more British album, a British sounding album than the previous two solo records were. Is sort of what I imagine, right? With those factories, with those darker tones, with those minor keys, you know, this one feels like a more British record than the last two. I don't know if you hear it that way as well.
You know, I hadn't actually thought of that before. It's interesting. I think it's a more dramatic record, and I think, you know, what you're talking about, some of the songs are a little longer and a little more, emotive and dramatic. I followed my feelings going into this record, which it may sound a little obvious, but because I'd in 2016 I'd written this autobiography, Set the Boy Free, and then I took 9 months making that, and then when that came out immediately, I then promoted that, which took me to the start of last year. I was out promoting that book on a book tour, and then when all of that writing about my childhood and my life and the band I'd been in and, you know, literally writing the life story was done, and then I had to go and explain my life story, which is all very much a process of looking back and analysing and theorising and explaining. I was really, really needed to get in the studio and make some music, either with my band or on my own, and, you know, I started this new factory space, and it was like that's what I mean about being led by my emotions. I didn't have time to, you know, kick back and go and sit on a beach somewhere or do some shows and conceptualize the next record too much, get my themes together. I just wanted to make music. So I would go in the studio and, as I say, plug in machines or plug in my guitar, and I was just led by my feelings. I didn't have any concept. And I think because I've been through a period of introspection with the book and I was in this space, I think that led for it to be a more, I would say more honest, but a more personal some of the songs are more personal. Let's put it this way. On the first two records, I definitely had an agenda to not play anything longer than 4 minutes or 4 minutes 10. Mm-hmm. I wanted the songs to be very much daytime music, what I call outside music. So I wanted the first two solo records to sound good in people's earphones when they're on the way to work or on the way to college or on the way to the gym or on the way back from school. Very much about the daytime. And have that daytime energy, whereas Paul the Comet is a little darker, as you mentioned. There's more minor keys and more feelings of exploring my sort of emotions a little bit more. This Action Tractor does that, I think, and definitely the song Walking to the Sea. That's a song that I think could only have been made once I got the first two solo records out of the way. I think
it's a beautiful record. And I know you're taking it on tour and you're going to be playing songs from your entire career. I know that probably means some songs from the Smiths, but does that also mean, do you play songs that you did with Modest Mouse and the when you do the live shows?
You know, I don't. I think one. Oh, no, I don't. I do with Electronic, the band I had in the 90s with Bernard Sumner mm-hmm. from New Order. Mm-hmm. I think that's because both the and Modest Mouse are actually out touring those songs now. So I don't know. I felt like it might be a little different in the but in Modest Mouse, I definitely felt like I was guesting in that band, and it's Isaac Brock's band. I think, you know, Isaac had already put an awful lot of his life into his band before I joined the band. So I don't know. Maybe I'd do a crazy encore one night when I maybe do a song that I'd written with that band or something. But I don't know. It's the Smiths was different because I formed that band, and Electronic, I formed that band too. So those bands felt a little bit more like I created them from scratch. So I think maybe subconsciously that's why I do that. You know, but yeah, I've got a kind of a big long repertoire of things that I've done with a lot of different musicians that maybe I could investigate one way or other. The important thing is that my band have to make them sound like my band. I'm not trying to make it sound necessarily like the Smiths or Electronic. We have our own kind of we put our own feelings into it, I think.
You know, now that you're really into the solo career, you know, now we're album three, now this is really, really real. Do you think your days of joining bands, and I'm not talking about collaborations, but, you know, like you'd done with Modest Mouse and that, do you think that's in the past and this is now what we're getting?
Yeah, I do, to be honest, Carl, because this feels very much like my day job. Running the band, fronting a band is gives you plenty of work to do and plenty to think about. And it gives me a lot of outlet as well, you know. So any free time that I may have in the future, I like to be taken up by looking for inspiration for songs, song titles, concepts of songs, a lot of reading, a lot of watching films, and with my antenna up for things that I can sing. So I think, this definitely is my main thing. I don't really see myself joining the group. If I'd wanted to be in another group, I would have joined the reformed Verdure, I think, mm-hmm. because that was a proposition, you know, or it's a scenario that maybe could have happened. And you know, I have a real brotherhood with that band. I played on the comeback song, which is a beautiful song called "We Can't Stop What's Coming." I really was happy to do that. And as anyone who's read my book or followed me over the years knows, you know, that really I was a potential member of the before the Smiths even. And you know, so to have, 35 years later, to have played on the comeback single was a felt really right to me. But that band had gone out on tour now, and I ended up recommending one of my friends to take my place, simply because I have a solo career that, and a big organisation that I have to kind of steer, you know. And that's nice. That's a good thing. I feel good about it creatively and personally.
The couple other things I'll hit here, though. Collaborations with Hans Zimmer have been really fun. Are there more of those planned?
Hans and I have always got the door open. Either me working on movies, I keep threatening to drag him into the studio to work on my record. Steve was so busy, but yeah, I've done a few movies with Hans now. I got very spoiled that the first one was Inception, which, you know, won a bunch of Oscars and was a really beautiful experience. And yeah, you know, in a way, I'm very proud that brought guitars back into film music, because before that, guitars, believe it or not, have been a real no-no in certainly big kind of Hollywood movies. So we kind of scored a little bit of a goal there for guitars, you know. I was involved with the Spider-Man movie, and we did a Julianne Moore film called Freehold. And there's a couple of other things that I pop up on uncredited on those movies. So I'm always around with Hans. You know, my son plays in, is working on a film with him now and plays in his orchestra. So Hans and I are like family. So you can't really get away from that. So that's an exciting thing. I think I'll be doing more of that.
And the last, you know, we did get the Queen box set last year. Do you think there's more of those? Because that one sort of came out of nowhere. That was a big surprise for Smiths fans, too. Do you think you're going to do more of those album box sets?
Well, I'd like for that to happen. Really, the short answer is that we could do that with every record. And I have to, if the politics allow, I have to give Warner Brothers all the credit there, because they did a really great job of it. They respected the legacy. They respected my wishes. I was involved quite closely in putting that together with them, and they respected the fans, I think, by putting out something that was classy, and they did it well. So that was great. You know, credit where it's due, I think. I've always made sure I keep my eye on those things. There was a period in the 90s when I wasn't really very pleased with the sound of what was going out of the Smiths records. I didn't like the way they'd been mastered. And again, you know, the record company listened to my complaints and let me go back and take all of the stuff they put on those 90s records, and they're now out there sounding really good, I have to say. So yeah, there's some good things, I think valid things, that are part of all those Smiths records. Not a ton of stuff, but they could do a decent job putting out, I think, pretty much all the official albums anyway, Strange Ways and Meets Murder in the first record. So if they're allowed to do that without too many politics, then I'll get involved and do my bit, you know.
And those politics. I do want to ask, though, when you've got an ex-bandmate, as you do, who says a lot of big outlandish things in the press, do you ever worry that that takes away from the legacy of the Smiths?
I don't really worry about very much, to be honest with you, these days. I don't really think you can change people's relationship with songs, and the songs are what they are, and the band was what it was, and the band stood for what it stood for. We're always very different people, and I think most people know that. So, you know, those things are kind of out of my control. I tend not to worry about things that are out of my control. Just see what happens, you know.
Well, so far, so good. I mean, the love for the Smiths hasn't ended, nor has the rest of it. And again, I don't want to end on that note right there, but I have been such a fan of these now trilogy of solo records, and I look forward to keep hearing what you're doing, and especially with the rest of Call the Comet that's on the way. So I thank you for the music, yeah, and for the conversation, Johnny.
You know, it's all a privilege, you know. Thanks very much, man. I'm glad there's people so far away who get what I'm doing. That's very gratifying.
Yeah, we'll keep listening. All right. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Kyle. All right, man. Bye now.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Thanks so much to Johnny Marr for giving me the call. The new solo record is called Call the Comets. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Consequence of Sound's YouTube channel to keep up with your favorite artists and interviews, as well as the podcast folks over at iTunes and Podchaser. They would love for you to give this little series a rating and a review. I would love for that as well. Then you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.